Chapter 3. Exhaustion drags John into sleep in the midst of a tangled web of worry and confusion so sharp that he thinks he'll never sleep again, and he wakes to the sound of a heartbeat close to his ear. There's no uncertainty about where he is this time. John opens his eyes already knowing precisely where he is, whose heartbeat it is. Something cold streaks through him, and he freezes even as his vision comes into focus. There's a body on top of him, curled around him. A leg between his, an arm wrapped around his waist, and John has never been this close to another person without exchanging blows. He closes his eyes, tries to breathe evenly, but all he can think about is the heat of Jaster's skin, overwhelming and so present that John can't focus on anything else. Jaster's breath is warm against the nape of his neck, and there's a big hand splayed across his stomach, right where his wound is. The steady beat of Jaster's heart, the quiet peace of his mind, is strangely unsettling, on the edge of overwhelming, and John can't move, can't even begin to think how to react. Jaster shifts, breathes out with a soft groan, and he shifts over John, knee sliding up between his legs. It makes John jolt, and there's heat pooling in his stomach, even though there shouldn't be. He drags in a ragged breath, digging his fingers into the mattress, but Jaster is halfway on top of him, and John can feel every inch of him, pressed right up against John's back. The hand on his stomach shifts, stroking lightly, and Jaster hums against his skin, like he's eminently pleased to be where he is. "I want you to marry me." The words echo, alarming in how unexpected they were, entirely bewildering in how little John knows how to take them. He stares down, not able to focus on anything but Jaster, vision filled with the sight of Jaster's arm around him, and he doesn't know what it's supposed to mean. Lying around in bed isn't something John has ever done, and that doesn't help either. It's soft and warm, and that heartbeat echoes through John's body, steady but certain. He wants to crawl out of bed and run, wants to vanish into the pre-dawn light. But at the same time, John isn't sure he would be able to bring himself to move, even if he could. He feels good right now. It's been a very long time since he felt like this. A little guiltily, a little furtively, John shifts, slow, careful, but he settles back a little more tightly into the curve of Jaster's body, lets their legs tangle more comfortably. It's warm. Feeling another person this close leaves John almost shaky, makes him want deep in the pit of his stomach, even if he can't put that desire into words, and he just wants to stay where he is for a short while longer. Shouldn't, and he knows it, but with a low sound, Jaster's arm tightens around him, and he presses his forehead to John's shoulder, breathes out. Hot breath on his spine makes John shiver despite himself, and he freezes, feeling hunted, caught. But there's no instant recoil from Jaster. Just a pause, a slip of fingers across John's skin that makes him bite down on the inside of his cheek to contain a reaction, and a quiet huff, soft in the cool stillness of the air. "Well," Jaster says, and his voice is low, amused. It curls down John's spine like a physical touch, like a lick of heat that lodges beneath his skin. "I see you stayed put for almost 8 hours. I'm impressed." John breathes out, tries desperately to drag some sort of ability to speak out of the tangle in his chest. "You seem to be making sure of that," he says hoarsely, and Jaster snorts. He pushes up, and John has to swallow the sharp sound to protest that wants to escape as body heat is replaced with cold as Jaster pulls away. His breath knots in his throat, and he has to contain himself so he doesn't reach out, doesn't pull Jaster back. Staying where he is seems like the best bet for all that it feels like loss. Greed, John thinks, closing his eyes, and there's something like despair eating away beneath his breastbone. He can't. He's a Jedi. He can't want like that. It's wrong. If his master knew. Fingers in his hair make him startle, jarred out of his thoughts, and he glances up to find Jaster leaning over him, dark eyes entirely focused on John. He smooths John's hair back, then says, "The medics will likely want to see you at some point today, to be sure you're healing well. And my aide, Miles, will start on arrangements today as well." Arrangements for their marriage. John swallows and he has no idea how to feel. It's not being used as a weapon against innocence, or even being set against the order like he'd feared, but he's not sure what it is. Not attachment, because he doesn't know Jaster, but something a step to the side of that. But then, John killed Montross even knowing that the Mandalore had claimed his death. He accepted the price and gave his word, and that leaves him uncertain, floundering. The Force says to stay, isn't pulling him away or warning him of danger, and for now, there's nothing to do but accept that he's supposed to be here. "All right," John says quietly, and carefully eases himself up as Jaster slides out of bed. It's hard to look away, hard not to let his gaze sweep over Jaster's form in what should be an assessment of threats, but isn't. Instead, John's eyes linger on the way his loose sleeping pants sit low on his hips, the breadth of his back and shoulders. Jaster is a big man, with the muscles of a man used to fighting in heavy full-body armor, and scarred. Not as thoroughly as John, but you've lived a warrior's life. The map of it stays on your skin, as it should. With an effort, John drags his eyes away, drops his gaze. "My clothes," he says. "Are they..." Jaster pulls a loose tunic on, then turns, and John feels hot under his gaze, even though it's only assessing. "They were unsalvageable," he says. "I had my people keep them, however, in case you wanted them. I'll have someone find you a set to wear until you can choose your own." "Thank you," John says, careful. "You didn't have to do that, but thank you." Jaster raises a brow at him, stripping off his pants, and John truly has to look away then. "They're yours," he says simply. "I know what I'm forcing you into, John, but I try not to erase free will and trample on others' property." The breath rasps in John's throat, and he reaches up to tuck his hair behind one ear. It's as if he can still feel Jaster's touch there, hot against the fingertips even now, and it's unnerving. "After the marriage," he manages, "you won't, I'll still be called on missions. And I will still take mercenary jobs," Jaster says, unbothered. "I don't expect you to cease being a Jedi, as I would hope you wouldn't expect me to cease being Mandalore. We both have our duties." He settles the tunic, rolling up the sleeves, and says, "You won't be a prisoner, just a spouse." John doesn't say he has no idea where the difference lies. "Thank you," he says again, quiet, and twists an edge of the blankets between his fingers. It's easy to doubt, to worry, to question, but this is where the Force wants him. Slowly, carefully, he breathes out, then pulls his legs up to cross them beneath him. His stomach twinges sharply, and he catches his breath on a wince, pressing his hand to it for a brief moment before he remembers himself and drops it again. Telegraphing weakness is something he should know better than to do, especially in an uncertain situation. A hand catches his before he can drop it entirely, though, and Jaster leans in, a gentle hand on John's shoulder, tilting him backwards just a little. John freezes, feeling vulnerable, exposed, like Jaster could lash out and eviscerate him with a single blow, but there's no hostility, no cunning in Jaster's mind. Just concern, light but honest, and John forces himself not to wrench away, fold over to protect himself. Jaster brushes his fingers across John's stomach, right where his hand was resting when he was asleep, and he frowns faintly. The scar tissue has faded enough that you shouldn't have a problem moving as long as you're slow, he says. Out into the garden, perhaps. John's entirely ready to go outside, even if it's brief, and he nods, watches as Jaster retrieves the Bacta, spreading it across his fingers, and tries not to flinch when he starts to stroke it into John's skin. There's a moment of silence that itches uncomfortable, and John grimaces a little to himself, then asks, "Do you need anything from me for the marriage?" Jaster pauses, considering. His mind is a quick thing, but careful, considering several responses and setting them aside. "I would like to have the ceremony finished quickly," he says, "so if you're hoping to summon witnesses or friends, it should be done today." John goes stiff, almost jerking back from Jaster's touch. The only person he could conceivably ask would be his master, and just the thought drives a spear of ice right through John's bones. "No," he says, more sharply than he means to. Catching himself, he restrains a wince and says more evenly, "There isn't anyone. Will that change things?" "No," Jaster says, straightening, and his attention is a heavy thing as he watches John, recapping the Bacta. "I can have Miles stand as your witness, if you would like, while Django or Arla stands as mine. A Mandalorian's family is what a Mandalorian makes of it, so there are very few unbendable rules." Relief shakes through John's chest, and he inclines his head in thanks, trying not to consider it a narrow escape. If he did have to tell Dark Woman, he can't even begin to imagine her reaction. "I would appreciate that," he says quietly. "Thank you." Jaster inclines his head. "I'll ask him," he says, and smiles when there's a knock at the door. "Miles, come in." The door opens, and a stocky, muscular Corran man with wildly curly hair cropped close to his skull leans in. He's not in armor, but he's carrying a data pad and a bundle of cloth tucked under one arm, and a tray balanced on one hand. "Your breakfast, Mandalore," he says, dry, and Jaster snorts. "You would never bring me my breakfast, Miles," he counters. "No, I wouldn't," Miles admits without hesitation. "The medical droid and the cooks conspired to make sure your captive eats something other than bread and water, though." Jaster frowns, and a touch of indignation flares. "Miles, he's not—" Miles rolls his eyes, but his gaze falls to John, and he eases through the door, then crosses the room with quick steps. "You look better, Jedi," he says, and it's mildly wary, watchful, but also steady and unalarmed. "When the Mandalore brought you in, I thought you were a corpse." "Thank you for taking care of me regardless," John says, low, and dips his head. When he raises it, Miles is looking at the braid holding one side of his hair back, and his brow arches. John goes hot with a feeling that's not quite caught, but manages to come close. But before he can say anything, Miles sets the tray down on the table beside the bed, then drops the bundle of cloth into John's lap. "Clothes," he says. "I don't know what you prefer beside Jedi robes, but I had the tailor find something in roughly the right size while she makes you a new set of tunics." "Thank you," John says, caught off guard by the consideration. He picks up the first piece of cloth and it's soft. So soft it catches on the calluses on his hands, and he wants to drop it again to keep from tearing it or getting it dirty. Hesitation curls through him, and he breathes in, then says quietly, "Is there a fresher?" "Of course," Jaster says, and offers John his arm. John eyes it for a moment, but when Jaster makes no other move, he carefully hooks his fingers around it and lets Jaster help him to his feet as he wraps one of the blankets around his waist. Standing is easier than it was yesterday, and he lets out a breath of relief, straightening cautiously. Jaster doesn't actively hold him up, but he watches John for a long moment before he says, "Let me help you there." For a moment, John thinks about arguing, but he likely does need the help, particularly if he's going to be standing for enough time to get himself clean. With a silent nod, he lets Jaster get an arm around his waist and... it's too close. Jaster is fully dressed, but John can still feel the heat of his body, the imprint of the hand against his hip. Jester is pressed up against him completely, and John is a few centimeters taller, but Jester is solid, an immovable support as he guides John's steps across the floor. John can't pull away, and he can hardly think of anything but Jester. The pace of his own heart, the way Jaster's fingers splay across his waist. It's a simple thing, just another body, and it shouldn't be overwhelming, but it is. John doesn't think he's ever had someone help him like this. Maybe years ago, on one of the rare occasions Dark Woman ran a joint mission with another master, but he can hardly even remember that, and it certainly didn't feel like this. "Here," Jaster says, and a hand on the panel has the door sliding open soundlessly. The fresher is large, and there's a set of sonics alongside a real water shower, a deep tub set into the floor. "Use whatever you like. This whole section of the compound has been sitting empty for years, though, so be patient with it." A pause, and he watches John for a moment, then says, "And with yourself as well. You were shot 6 times at close range. Things may move quickly, but you hardly need to." "Thank you," John says roughly, pulling away, and Jaster lets him go without argument. He backs out, and the door slides shut behind him, leaving John standing in the middle of the cold room, wrapped in a borrowed blanket and still clutching clothes entirely unlike his familiar, much-patched robes. John breathes in, breathes out. He folds down to his knees, bowing his head, and reaches for meditation, for the Force, trying desperately to see if he's made a mistake, because none of this can be right. He can't be feeling this way. He can't be meant to stay here. But the Force is quiet, calm. The threads that have always guided John's steps are coiled and quiescent around this building. Around Jaster, most of all. No matter what John might want to assume, he's meant to be in this place. He has a task here, now, with this man and these people. John just wishes that he could know what it is with the same certainty that he knows it exists. "Of all the things you've asked me to do," Miles says, "including sneaking into the Jedi Archives, I didn't ask you to sneak in. I wanted you to ask about their policy of lending to those outside the temple," Jaster starts, offended by the implication. "You wanted me to ask as a Corran," Miles points out, unimpressed. "I think that counts as sneaking, sir." "It is not," Jaster admits, "entirely dissimilar." He huffs, annoyed at the memory, and folds his arms. "Not that it worked. That Jedi witch can sniff out a Mandalorian better than a bloodhound." Miles doesn't quite roll his eyes, but Jaster can tell he wants to. "Still, even including that, asking me to organize a formal wedding for the Mandalore in less than 2 weeks, even on a reduced scale, is a high bar." "That's what you have a jetpack for," Jaster points out, and when Miles scowls at him, he snorts, amused. "If it can't be done, Miles, that's perfectly acceptable. We can simply sign the documents in front of witnesses and spread the news another way." "You always have to be reasonable," Miles says, a mild complaint, and holds up his datapad. "I can do it, probably, but you're going to make the heads of every new Mandalorian explode simultaneously." "Good," Jaster says dismissively. "The Kalevalan faction of the new Mandalorians has been a thorn in his side since the moment he started trying to unite the warrior clans, and it's only gotten worse over the years with the Death Watch's actions." Jaster understands, intellectually, the desire for peace and pacifism, but he will never understand the urge to give up every aspect of Mandalorian culture and wipe away millennia of history just to be able to bury one's head in the sand and ignore the rest of the galaxy. Miles's smile is crooked. "Agreed, but it's still something you're going to have to deal with eventually, sir. Allying the Jedi and the Mandalorian clans isn't a move any Mandalore has made in a long time." Jaster grimaces, sinking down in the chair in the corner and rubbing his face. "This civil war has been going on for far too long, Miles. More than half of Jango and Arla's lives has been spent fighting the Death Watch, and the periods of peace keep getting shorter. If we can finally bring an end to Tor Vizsla's reign of terror over our system, even the blasted Kalevalans can't complain. Of course they can. They're just going to have to find something different to complain about. Miles glances down at his pad, then takes a seat on top of a weapons chest along the wall. I'm putting Arla in charge of security and leaving everything there up to her, so if you have any concerns, bring them to her. And if you want to hold the wedding here, you're going to have to convince the governor to stop calling you a felon on Concord Dawn. She won't listen to me. Jaster wants to do that very little, but it's well past time he addresses the matter. Her position has kept Concord Dawn more or less neutral since the war started, particularly in the early days, right after Jaster claimed his title, but no more. He's had enough of the backhanded support while she also plays nice with the Death Watch. Very well, he says grimly. I'll calm her tomorrow. Anything else? Miles makes a thoughtful sound. Well, I was thinking I would put Django in charge of the decorations. Jaster sighs through his nose, trying to hide his amusement. This is nothing but revenge, and I did nothing to deserve it. With all due respect, Mandalore, you told me you were marrying a Jedi 2 days ago, while the Jedi was still unconscious in our cruiser's medbay, Miles says, and that tone means Jaster is lucky to have escaped that conversation with his dignity intact. If this was revenge, I'd be entirely justified. Jaster chuckles, raising his hands. Very well, I can't argue with that. Was there actually anything else? Miles pauses, and his gaze flickers to the fresher door, then slides back to Jaster. I thought this was just political, he says after a moment. A little bemused by this line of questioning, Jaster raises a brow. It is, he confirms, though I expect at least half of the super commandos will take it as me finally hitting my midlife crisis. Miles actually laughs at that, and he's grinning when he says, You've still got 40 years to go before you're middle-aged, sir, but they're definitely going to assume you aren't thinking with your big brain. Jaster sighs, already more than able to imagine the teasing. Django and Arla both seem to think I've lost my mind, so I'll assume that's an improvement. They're both very clever, Miles says placidly. Has the Jedi told you his name yet, or am I filling out his portion of the paperwork with a question mark? John Antilles, Jaster says, bland, and when Miles gives him a disbelieving look, he tips his head. I believe he's telling the truth. Wrinkling his nose, Miles makes a note on his pad. JT, he mutters, and then asks, You'll have your armor for the ceremony. Robes for him, to make it clear he's a Jedi. Jaster makes to answer, then pauses. John's reaction when Jaster said they had saved his tattered old robes is easy enough to remember, and it's a simple thing to keep going. Let him choose. I have no doubt the tailor will have more than enough ideas to overwhelm him. There's a pause as Miles regards him closely. I'm sure she will, he says. You realize I'm going to ask Arla to do that, right? I assumed, Jaster says dryly, seeing as you have no respect. It's sympathy I don't have, Miles counters. You have my full respect, Mandalore, as always, but none of my sympathy. He makes another note, then pauses, and says, If this is just because you think you finally found a foolproof way to get past the Jedi's librarian... He's laughing at Jaster. Jaster knows it perfectly well, and he sighs, aggrieved, as Miles fights not to laugh. She's an archivist, and access to the archives, should I receive it, is a happy accident on the way to consolidating the true Mandalorian's power. Of course, Miles says tolerantly. How many guests for the Jedi? Jaster pauses, and the look on John's face when he asked is still all too clear, something like fear that surfaced for a bare instant before he locked it away again. None, he says, and Miles casts a glance at the fresher door, but doesn't comment. I checked those names you sent me, he says instead. The Firehand gang has tripled in size in the last few years, and no one can tell where their credit flow is coming from. They're primarily drug runners, though, and they keep to themselves, so no one's looked too closely. No one but a lone Jedi, operating in the Outer Rim, Jaster thinks, and sighs. If Vizsla is contracting with gangs for supplies and weaponry, it will be a blasted nightmare tracking down all of them, he says. I'm sure the Firehands aren't the only ones working with them. They're not, John says, quiet, and Jaster turns, startled by the complete lack of previous noise, and stops, unable to look away. The tunic and pants Miles brought are just a little too tight, a touch too small. They cling, and the sight shouldn't be somehow more intriguing than John stripped bare, but this is the promise of taking the offending clothing off again. Jaster sweeps a look over John, not quite able to help himself, and finds himself entirely focused on the way John's wet hair curls just a little where it falls against the green cloth. "John," he says, and finally remembers himself enough to push to his feet, crossing the room to slide an arm around John's waist. There are scars beneath his touch, clear where the shirt rides up, and Jaster can't help but drag his thumb along one as he settles his grip. The way John shivers is a gratifying thing, and the sideways flicker of a glance from pale blue eyes catches Jaster's attention in a way nothing has done in a long while. "Feel better?" he asks, soft, and John swallows, leaning into Jaster's body for half an instant before he pulls away again. "Much," John says roughly, and Jaster lowers him into his own chair and pauses. He can't resist the urge to brush a few of those wet strands of hair back, can't help the way the dip of John's dark lashes captivates him. The urge to reach up and smooth his fingers across the scar that cuts across his brow is strong. "Do you know the names of the other ones?" Miles asks, and the question jars Jaster out of his distraction. He straightens, frowning, and John flicks a glance at him for a half second before he focuses on Miles. "Only two," he answers, "and one crew where I couldn't find evidence of a connection, but I'm sure they're working for the Death Watch. News of Montross interrupted my mission, though. My comm has all of my notes." Montross was certainly skilled at upsetting things, Jaster agrees grimly, and leans against the edge of the chair. "I believe the comm is still with your old robes." "I'll go get it myself," Miles promises, and rises. "Mandalore, Jedi Knight Antilles." The expression that flickers across John's face is almost bemused, but before Jaster can ask about the reason, John pushes up, getting his feet under him with obvious effort. His balance wavers as he makes it upright, and Jaster catches him automatically, holding him on his feet. "I think the garden will have to wait," he says. "Bed, for now, and food. The medics will be by shortly, I have no doubt, and Miles will be back with your comm in a moment." Dark hair falls over the nape of John's neck as his head dips, and Jaster finds his attention caught again, this time by the sharp line of John's jaw, the arch of his brow, the new absence of stubble. Still not pretty, but striking, Jaster thinks, is an appropriate word. "Something is going to happen here," John says quietly, and his eyes are fixed ahead of them, but his voice doesn't waver. "Not dark, but something large." Cold prickles down Jaster's spine. He's never been entirely sure what parts of the Jedi's abilities are spacer tales and what parts are grounded in truth, but this, he thinks, as he watches John raise his head, as he meets pale blue eyes that are full of nothing but honesty, this might be one of the more unsettling abilities, if it is one. End of chapter 3.